Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, America's right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host, Lockheed Martin Corp., may get a contract to build our next generation fighter for the Air Force called the Joint Strike Fighter. The contract is worth $200 billion. That's a lot of money. That's the most money we've ever planned to spend on any weapons program. Wow. What a fighter that'll be, huh? Very versatile. Versatile airplane, deadly stealth capabilities, $200 billion. Hey, you know what we're doing now in Afghanistan, and this has never been done in the history of warfare. We've just started doing this. We're flying unmanned drones, airplanes by remote control through Afghanistan, around Kabul, and the areas that we're interested in. Kandahar and elsewhere, and the drones, now we have done this before, the drones have cameras on them, and we could spot targets and find troop concentrations, but this is the new thing. We've taken these, and these planes, you could fit these planes typically in your living room. They're not real large, they're small, miniature airplanes, unmanned flying drones. And there's somebody a few miles away or hundreds of miles away with remote control and watching what the drone is finding, looking for targets, and telling it where to fly. Well, we've now equipped these drones with Hellfire missiles. Hellfire missiles are serious. I'll tell you, when I used to work for McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company on the Apache helicopter, and that was before the Army started taking shipment of the Apaches, I was working on the software for that program. And then after the shipment started, so I was there not for a long time, but that was the beginning of my computer career, about a year at McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company. While I was there, I got to brief a Pentagon procurement general. It was very enjoyable, very fulfilling. Well, the Apaches, among the armament that it could be equipped with, included Hellfire missiles, and those things are ferocious. So now, we've just done this. We've just outfitted these unmanned drones, and they come in different sizes, these planes, and I imagine it's the heftier ones that we are arming. But we've equipped these things now with Hellfire missiles and other weapons. So you've got, I mean, this is dramatic. What we've mentioned on this show, what economic prosperity can do for the security of a nation. And if some international criminal like Saddam Hussein wants to hurt our economy, lower our standard of living, we don't take kindly to that because then people die and stress levels go up and health goes down. And people die younger and all kinds of problems. Well, one problem is if your economy's not great, you can't defend yourselves in increasingly sophisticated and secure ways. I'd rather to be able to defend America with risking as few American lives as possible. And that's great as long as you're not an aggressor nation. If you're not a nation that's advancing on your neighbors or trying to commit crimes internationally using your military, then the stronger the military you have, the better. And so just picture how many of these planes do we have over there? I don't know. I'm sure it's a small number. But what do you want to bet that the military is now ordering these planes by the thousands? Could you imagine, remember in World War II when England was not doing very well, 1940, 41, with their bombers? And they thought that, you know, the way to defeat Nazi Germany is send bombers over there and go after Berlin, go after the Ruhr, do whatever they can do to destroy Germany's ability to build weapons, their industrial infrastructure. In fact, in the Ruhr, England, they built these special bombs. They were like in barrels, and they would drop them from low-flying planes in reservoirs, and the barrels would hit sideways on the water, and they would skip. They'd spin, roll, and skip over the water, and they might bounce four or five times over 100 yards or more until they hit a dam. Then they'd hit the dam, and they were designed to sink, and when they got 30 feet below the surface of the water, they exploded and blew up the dams. And I tell you, England flooded the Ruhr. It was a mess. But it didn't work. It didn't work. The Nazis were able to just deal with it, and they continued just to decimate England. And it is a good thing we went into the war, of course. The power that Germany had, without America, England was in big, big trouble. But this is what England did. They decided, they got a new guy to head up their bombing, their bombing division, and he was quite a guy, and this was his plan. He said, since the country, the military, Churchill, nobody believes that these bombers are going to be effective because the Nazis were shooting them down. The Nazi anti-aircraft fire, they lit up the night around their cities with high-powered spotlights, and they shot down hundreds and hundreds of English bombers. It was a real problem. And the bombing was very inaccurate, a real mess. So this is what they did to get people to believe in the ability of the Air Force, England's RAF, to make a difference in the war. They picked one city, and if I recall, it was Cologne in Germany on the Ruhr, and they decided to send everything they had one night to bomb that city. They not only got every plane and every pilot they had, but all their test pilots, guys who were not even out of training yet, they sent them all, 1,030 airplanes, and they bombed the living daylights out of Cologne. Bombed the living daylights out of that city. They lost about 30-some planes, maybe 37, 38 planes. And that was the beginning of a turnaround, not only in England's strategy, but in warfare generally. That was a turnaround. And so what now, here's a new time, when we could send unmanned drones. I imagine the Pentagon now is ordering these things by the thousands, these airplanes that have no pilots. They're unmanned. You sit at a computer with a joystick, and you tell it, okay, go down Main Street in Kabul, stop at the red light. Well, they're not on the ground. They're up in the air. But here, make a left here. Make a left turn. And you see that truck? You see that troop transport truck with 8 or 10 soldiers in it? Send one of those Hellfire missiles into it. And you fire it, and those soldiers are dead, and that truck is destroyed. And you've got pinpoint accuracy of targets being identified. And you don't need pre-designated satellite identified or ground intelligence targets. You don't need permanent targets, but you find targets of opportunity with no threat to an American pilot. That's incredible. Wouldn't it be neat if we sent 1,000 of these drones through Kandahar? 1,000 drones a day. Talk about a plague of locusts. Wow. Well, so anyway, that Lockheed Martin may be getting this contract for $200 billion for our next fighter jet. It'll replace the F-16s and the F-15s starting in 2008. Neat. Now, hey, we've got more to talk about regarding what's going on in Afghanistan. But first, I'd like to tell you about what's going on my front porch. Now here's, I want to tell you, okay, let Kandahar hold on for a minute. I want to tell you what's going on our front porch. We had a local politician come and ring our doorbell. My son Michael ran to the door, and he can't get the front door open. Tried to get it open, and so I came behind him, opened the door, and there was a smiling guy with a businessman in a suit with a beard and a mustache, and his name is Aaron Azari, and he's running for Arvada City Council. And so anyway, and oh, by the way, we'll take your calls starting in just a moment. Our phone number is 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. Okay. So Aaron Azari, he says to me, he says, hey, I can tell you must have a lot of kids. You've got two milk boxes out here. I said, yes, we have a lot of kids and they like milk. He said, well, I wanted to introduce myself. I'm running for Arvada City Council. And I'm just out here meeting people and wanting to let people know that I care about Arvada and asking them to vote for me. And I said, well, Mr. Azari, we are strong conservative Christians. That's what's important to us. And we support strong conservative Christians. Are you a conservative Christian? And he said, well, I'm a Christian. And so my mind thought for a moment, how do I establish that he's a liberal? So I thought I'd bring up a topic. So right away I responded saying, oh, well, we're concerned about the public schools in Arvada because what we've seen is that the young girls in the middle school and high school, for one, the schools are like an incubator for sexual harassment, and they're constantly being harassed sexually by the boys. And two, there's a significant percentage of the girls in Arvada that are having sex in middle school and high school. So I said, do you have any idea what the percentage is of Arvada high school girls that are having sex? And he said, well, I would have no idea. But he said, you know, kids get their morals from the parents, not from the schools. So I said, well, the parents in our neighborhoods, they all went to A West High School. They all went to the public schools in Arvada and around Colorado. And that's where they lost their morals because their parents raised them to be moral, but they lost their morals in school. And he said, well, I went to public school. And I said, and you're pro-abortion. He said, what? Because he had never mentioned anything about abortion, and I have never heard of this man until he walked up and rang my bell. I said, you're pro-abortion. He said, no, I'm not. I said, well, you're pro-choice, right? And he hesitated. And I said, you believe that women have the right to have an abortion, right? And he said, yes. And I said, see, you did lose your morals in school, just you weren't aware of it. You lost your morals in school, and we will not vote for you. We will not vote for you because you do not know right from wrong. So I said, thank you for coming to our home. He said, all right, bye. That was Aaron Azari. Aaron Azari, and nice family he's got. He's got a photo of him and his family, and he's got two teenage boys and a teenage girl. And they go to the public schools in Arvada. So to what extent is his daughter the target of sexual harassment? Maybe we could do a survey at her school and find out how the boys treat the girls in Mr. Azari's kids' school. She has she met a guy at our local grocery store who's also running, And his literature says on the front cover he's a Christian and he's got Bible verses on it. So we got to check into that. All right, let's go to the phones. Again, our number is 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. And by the way, you can email us at kgovlive@aol.com. In California, Johnny, speak your mind.
Hi, Bob.
Welcome to the show, Johnny.
How you doing?
Great.
Good. I just want to call, make a few comments about the public schools because you criticize them a lot, and I'm not too fond with them myself.
Mm.
I just kind of wonder whether you put too much emphasis on it.
All right.
Barking up the wrong tree because, you see, I grew up in a public school system myself, and I saw the sexual harassment that you talk about that the kids do to the girls. And,
right.
But I was a bit different. Even though my family wasn't raised in a church, my mom started teaching the Bible and about Jesus to us. So I became saved around 13 years old.
Okay.
Johnny,
let me interrupt you a second. As I'm listening to your story, I'm comparing it to me. And I went to public high school, but private school and grammar school. And I became a Christian in September of my freshman year in high school. So there's some similarity, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, basically I did get from my mom the way to respect women. And I got jeered and criticized for that in a public school. I mean, it was awful.
Right, by the kids mostly?
By the kids, yes.
At all by
and,
the kids.
And even the bus driver.
How so? I don't want to interrupt you because I want you to make your main point, but how so the bus driver?
Well, because the kids were making fun of me on the bus.
Okay.
And the bus driver participated.
And because you were trying to be virtuous and respect women.
Right.
Respect young ladies.
And the women even laughed.
Sure.
And the women
right.
took up for me. So, anyway, that was way off. No, I was right on, but, you know, to them I was way off.
Right, right.
Anyways, the reason why I call is because I didn't grow up in a public schools, but I had neighbors whose kids did.
Yeah.
And they had that false sense of security that if they send their kid to a parochial school, that would be best for them. But, you know, when the parties came around, they're the ones who, you know, among other ones, and they're getting involved in the sex also.
Oh, you're not kidding. Johnny,
I mean, it definitely is our Western culture, if you want to call it American culture.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the main problem. But as far as the school is concerned, it's mainly what the parents put into the kids.
Well, I went to a Catholic grammar school, and in the later years, the sexual in grammar school, first through eighth grade, and in the later years, the sexual immorality in that school was rampant. I mean, kids at that age being extremely involved sexually, the boys and girls. So anyway, I can relate to what you're talking about. Yeah, sure. Private schools often are just as bad as public schools, and the parents might have this false sense of security that their kids are safe because it's a private school or even a Christian school. And a lot of the Christian schools that used to be good are having a much harder time because all the, you know, the basket cases from the public schools fail in the public schools, and the parents put them in the Christian schools, and they come in with their drugs and their pornography, and they seduce the cute Christian girls. So, yeah,
well,
I agree with those problems.
Right, and well, the reason why I call it is I'm wondering whether it's more profitable if there's a more profitable approach to schooling, or at least where we want to put our kids. No, that's not how I want to say that. I just don't think it's profitable to really beat down on the public schools when really, you know, it'll be more profitable to beat on the parents.
I disagree about a zillion, million, and a billion percent. I disagree.
Okay.
And let me tell you why. If you're going to hold the parents responsible, then the parents have to do what's right to raise their kids right. And that includes, you cannot raise your kids right if you let them go to public schools.
That's because they're worse than private schools.
If you let your kids go to public school, you are a bad parent right off the bat. You're failing your kids. It's the equivalent of child abuse to give your kids into the hands of a godless education system for them to be raised.
Okay, I see.
So you can't be a good parent and have your kids in public school, not while your kids are minors.
Okay.
When your kid is an adult, he's 17, 18 years old, and he wants to be an architect or a doctor, and because of our system, he has to have a college degree, that's another matter. But if your child still lives at home and is going to college, the parent should be very concerned to make sure that his college experience is positive and he survives it.
Well, that's a good point. We should not allow our kids to go and to fall into the hands of a godless institution.
Right. So, when they're our kids, we're responsible, and you don't hand your kids over to the Philistines to be educated in a godless system. And, you know, the parents that we're talking about, they all went to public school. So they don't even know right from wrong, many of them, regarding issues of morality and children. They're immoral. Parents have let kids have sex in their own homes. You know how common that is? Parents give condoms to their daughters.
Bob, when me and my wife went on our honeymoon last June, we were shocked to see in Cancun how many parents were there with their 16-year-old daughter, 15-year-old son,
right
there with their girlfriends and boyfriends.
You're not kidding.
And we're sitting on the plane, or we're sitting on a tour, and the kids are there necking each other and kissing each other, and the parent is right there.
It's just unbelievable.
That is unbelievable.
Right. So the parents don't know right from wrong, and one of the big reasons is because the morality of their grandparents and great-grandparents has been destroyed through the effort of the media and the public school system. So anyway,
by the way, you know about the public institution.
Yeah.
I was debating with a guy over some. He had taken some Bible scriptures out of context, and really, it was a disaster the way he interpreted them. And we were kind of debating over that. And he told me that John the Baptist had his head chopped off by a woman, and then she had sex with the head.
Oh, Johnny, you shouldn't even repeat that.
Let alone on
the air.
Not Doug.
That's all right. That's
Bob,
a compliment.
Bob,
yeah.
I asked him where he got that from, and right. He told me it was in the Bible, but when I pressed him to answer it and show it to me, he finally admitted it wasn't in there. He got it from an arts appreciation class in college.
Yeah. And Johnny, you could tell the story without, you ever hear the saying, too much detail? Is that thing? Too many details. Anyway. Okay, so, yeah, that's a good illustration of how our colleges are just sick. They're sick. We've seen it for so many years, it's become humdrum to hear more examples.
Right. Bob, right before you took my call,
yeah.
You said someone who wanted to be on a school board came to your home?
Arvada City Council.
For Arvada City Council.
Yeah, where we live in Colorado.
Okay.
A politician came by.
Okay. We had a lady come by to our church. The next city over, they want to break off from Los Angeles Unified School District. That city wants to start its own school district, and she wants to run to be on the board, on the school board. So someone invited her to speak at her church.
Hmm.
So she comes off, and the first thing that she says is she comes in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Mm.
And we hear a lot of good Christian things come out of her mouth. Now, after church service is over, and I want to go and ask her some questions,
uh-huh.
I asked her, if she goes to the board, if she was going to make moral Christian decisions. And she says, well, I'm going to do my best to do that. And I said, no. I said, you're going to have to do this. She couldn't even make a promise that she was going to do that.
Right, that she can't even make moral decisions.
No.
She'll try.
She needs it to other people to understand.
Right, right.
She told me she hopes it never comes to that point. And
she hopes what
that?
Never comes to that point? She hopes what never comes to that point?
She hopes that it never comes to a point where she has to make an decide on a issue that might be immoral when it comes to Christians.
So obviously she is a blithering idiot, right? Because
I didn't call her that, but I was thinking, I was like, well,
obviously,
I thought she was a wolf.
Obviously, she thinks that the public schools have not yet crossed over the line into immorality when they have young girls go have abortions during school hours so the parents don't know what's going on.
Well, and, what's ironic
hey,
is...
let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
Since the L.A. Unified School District has the number one best public school in the whole country, why would her area want to break off from it?
Because, that's the irony here.
Do you know which school I'm talking about? The L.A. School District has the number one best public school in the whole country. You know which one it is?
No, I don't.
You know that one they built? What did they say?
Oh, the one they...
$50 million
they built on a dump?
Yeah, the one that they built on top of a toxic waste dump.
Right.
And there's not a single kid in that school. There's not one kid being destroyed. L.A.'s got the best public school in the whole country. Not one kid has been hurt in that school, and now this idiot woman wants to break off from L.A. when they're leading. They're the leading district for setting an example.
Well,
all right,
you're a step ahead of me there.
Johnny, we're going to have to go.
Okay.
But, hey, thank you so much for your call.
You hit my email, Bob.
Oh, Johnny, we get so many emails I can't possibly remember.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, take care, Bob. Thanks for taking my call.
God bless you. I appreciate that. Yeah, you know, people call in and they say, "Bob, this is Joe. Do you remember me? Remember me?" And we've been on the internet only for a while now, and we are trying to get back on real radio, back on the radio, in a few cities and on satellite. We're working on that, and that may happen over the next few weeks. And of course, we'll let you know if one way or another. But I used to take 1,000 calls a year on the air, and who knows how many off the air, and emails and letters and death threats and whatever. But and then I'll get a call and somebody say, "Bob, this is Joe. Do you remember me?" And I think, why does Joe want to be, why does he want to be let down? Why is he setting himself up for disappointment? I said, "Joe, I don't remember you." Why does he do that to himself? He should think, well, Bob gets a lot of calls, and he probably doesn't know every voice, memorize the harmonics of every tonal pattern that he hears over 10 years. So anyway. But, the anthrax that's continuing the attack on our country, the terrorist attack from, it originates with Iraq's leader, Saddam Anthrax Hussein. Saddam Anthrax Hussein should be our second target. After we're done in Afghanistan, we go to Iraq. After Afghanistan, Iraq, we already have our military in the Middle East. We're there. We're ready. We're primed. We've got more of these unmanned drones. Hopefully, we've got them coming in from the manufacturers as we speak.
We're riding now. Upon the foothills of peace, leaving the cares of the world.
We're back, Bob and you're live. 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. So these last 2 days, American planes have been pounding Taliban positions at the front lines just north of the capital, Kabul. It's pronounced to rhyme with rubble, Kabul. And this is new. We haven't done this since the beginning of the bombing 2 weeks ago. We've left those troops north of the city so that they would work like American troops. We were using them because we didn't want the Northern Alliance to come into the capital of Afghanistan too early and maybe cause additional problems for us. So we decided to leave the Taliban troops in position north of the capital, holding off the Northern Alliance until we were ready for the Northern Alliance to move in closer to the city. And so 2 weeks we took to, and we're working on a political, trying to prepare for the political aftermath of this military victory. And now we've just started pounding these troop positions about 25 miles north of the capital, not the front line, but just behind the front line. So the concentrations of Taliban troops, supplies, trucks, tanks, weapon caches. And so that's what we're targeting, and especially forces. So, and they've been pretty much unscathed for the past 2 weeks. So they might be thinking, wow, these Americans, they can't get us. We're too tough. That's what their leaders are telling them. And every U.S. military personnel in the Middle East is thinking, keep telling them that. Keep telling them they're so good that we're afraid to attack them. Keep telling them that. And they'll go to their graves with that the last thought on their minds. We're too tough. We're just too tough. And that's it. Have you thought about these guys that have been killed in this battle, committed Muslims, Muslim extremists, willing to kill innocent people who are not Muslims? Actually, they're even willing to kill their own Muslim brothers. But at any rate, and then the moment they die, what's their next word, their next thought? We're just too tough. Allah? Is that you, Allah? Oops. Doesn't look like Allah. Where am I? I mean, immediately, if we get Osama bin Laden and we kill him, and I pray that we don't arrest him. I pray that we just kill him. And this is a great development that we have just learned about. It happened last month. But George W. Bush gave the CIA a lot of money in one command. This is cool. The CIA has not had anything this cool since their inception. George Bush gave them $1 billion, billion with a B. He gave to the CIA $1 billion, and he said, go kill Osama bin Laden. Here, use this money. Do whatever you have to do. Go kill Osama bin Laden. And I imagine if they don't spend the whole billion and they kill him, say, with 300 million, then they got 700 million to use on the next project. But that's pretty cool. That's really cool. So at any rate, Osama, these terrorists, the Taliban troops, the Al-Qaeda specially trained warriors, as soon as they get a 25 millimeter round blowing up their Jeep. Do they have Jeeps over there? I think all they have is Datsuns and Nissans. Converted. I didn't see any Jeeps so far. They have a few tanks. Oh, yeah, and they have some wheels from an old helicopter. They said that they shot down one of our helicopters over Kandahar, and to prove it, they brought the wheels and a sheet of paper from a Loud Engineering manufacturer that they said was on the helicopter. The problem is they've had some old, beat up, and broken down helicopters there for 15 years that we sent them years ago to fight the Russians. So they took a set of wheels and they said, we shot down one of your helicopters. Oh, and they also said that they got a bunch of American soldiers that they took as prisoners. They shot down two helicopters. So the media says, well, show us the helicopter. Oh, we can't do that. It's in a minefield. Well, then take a picture of it, you idiots. Show us the picture. Anyway, obviously they're lying. And CNN reports all this, and the Pentagon says, no, they didn't shoot down. No, they didn't take any prisoners. And CNN reports, well, to be absolutely fair, we have no way of confirming either story. What idiots, CNN. CNN, they're just idiots. You have no way of confirming either story. Okay, granted, but the Taliban story is a lie on the face of it. On the surface, it's a lie. You idiot communist at CNN. Obviously, the Taliban, for as backwards as they are, they know how to run a video camera, a home video camera. So winter's coming on, and the month of Ramadan is approaching. The Muslim holy month of Ramadan, where they fast for a whole month. And by the end of the month, their blood sugar's so low, you just pick them off, piece of cake. They're all just looking for food. Actually, they eat all month, but they only eat at night. The month of Ramadan, they fast during the day. So, hey, now, you know, there's a funny quote in an article. I think, what is this, a Reuters article here out today? It says that our American government has been working to cobble together a broad opposition front before the Northern Alliance gets into Kabul. And I thought it's funny. They said they're working to cobble together a united front, COBBLE. That's sort of funny. To put together, like in a clumsy fashion, they're going to cobble together they're going to cobble together an alliance to rule Kabul. At any rate, that was funny wording they chose. Hey, and you know what they do, the Pashtuns? There's an article in the New York Times today. The Pashtuns, the ethnic group that lives mostly in southern Afghanistan, and the Taliban come from the Pashtun tribe, which spans Afghanistan and Pakistan. When a male child is born, not a female, but when a male child is born, the first sound it hears is gunfire. They shoot guns into the air to celebrate the birth of a male child, a new warrior. And when they shoot, you know, you shoot up into the air and the bullets come back down. We see them do this in Palestine, in the West Bank and Gaza, on the news all the time. And there's thousands of people in a big square, and there are idiots shooting their rifles straight up into the air. And so this New York Times article says that Afghanistan, they began this tradition 2 centuries ago when they robbed muskets from dead British soldiers. And they said the muskets didn't shoot very high and the bullets were tiny, according to Pashtun elders. So there was little risk back then. But then, generations later, Pashtuns took rifles from the Soviet soldiers that were Kalashnikov rifles. And according to one Pashtun elder, from the town of Pabi, just outside of Peshawar, he said, but the Kalashnikov bullet was so big and heavy that when we fired it in celebration, it dropped back down out of the sky and killed us. So I guess they're celebrating the birth of a new warrior, and there's a significant casualty rate that went along with that. And he says, but the shooting hasn't stopped. The tradition is strong. Even the police are ignored. And this elder said, a law, a government is not so much a factor here in Afghanistan. So anyway, what a trip. You learn weird things about people when you start bombing them. You learn weird things about people. All right. Now, hey, I got an email here. I got an email. We put up on our website, if you have a copy of the first sermon that we ever did at our Denver Bible Church, we've lost the master, and we could use a copy of it. So anyway, let's see here. I got an email from a Brian Fletcher, sbfletcher@yahoo.com. He says, Bob, I noticed on your denverbiblechurch.org website that you lost your master tape of the What is a Church sermon. I have a copy. I think it's a good copy, but I've listened to it about 20 times now, so that may have affected the quality. Let me know if you need it. Well, Brian, thank you very much. I appreciate that swift response, and we do need it. Let's see. Now, let me see. Oh, there's something else I wanted to run by you, Brian writes. Of how nice. I haven't even read this. I just opened this up. And so let's see. You are an excellent teacher. Thank you, Brian. Thank you very much. I've learned so much from your television, now internet radio show, and your video and audio tapes. Hey, and Brian, by the way, it's because you're getting those from us, that's kept us on the air all this time, and now we're trying to get back on radio, and it's thanks to you and those others who have been making donations and buying our materials all along. Thank you very much. And by the way, if anyone wants to donate money and you need a tax deduction, don't donate to Bob and Yurt Live, because that's not a tax-exempt organization. Please make your check out to Denver Bible Church, and then you can take a tax deduction. And it does not go to Bob and Yurt Live, but it does help to pay my salary as the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and it helps our ministry there. And perhaps one day, if Denver Bible Church continues to grow, they might be able to get me back on the radio in Denver as a function of the church, or maybe buy advertising on my radio show in Denver. That'd be cool. So, of course, I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and that does mean that my Bible teaching and our ministry that we conduct on our website, even though it's not tax exempt, it's very similar to the ministry we conduct at Denver Bible Church. Okay, let's see. So he thanks us for our materials. I haven't had the opportunity to see you in person at one of your seminars. You need to come to Phoenix. Hey, I agree. Brian, when I worked for McDonnell Douglas Helicopter Company, that was in Phoenix. Actually, it was in Mesa, Arizona, right next to Phoenix. I went to Arizona State University. Or maybe I'll take a vacation to see you sometime. Come on out to Denver, Brian. That would be great. In fact, anybody out there, any of our friends, come on out to Denver this winter. Vacation in Colorado. Go skiing up at Vail or Keystone, Aspen, wherever. Beaver Creek, if you're really wealthy. And then come and visit us in Denver. That'd be great. Okay, so he says, come on vacation sometime. Anyway, I was thinking the next best thing would be an online seminar or class. I bet there would be a great interest in something like this among your listeners, especially since many are already internet aware. I was actually looking for a good interface for online IT certification training. And so he goes on, da-da-da-da-da-da. Hey, Brian, thank you very much for the suggestion. And it's a lack of manpower. Brian's suggestion continued. He suggested that we maybe get involved with an internet school and offer our courses. And Brian, thank you for that suggestion. And we've got a database here of ideas, and I'm pasting it into this database right now. It's there, Brian. Your idea is there, and we'll keep it. We'll toss it around, but it's a problem of manpower. We need more people at our church at kgov.com working for Bob and Yart Live. We just need more people, more help, and we could implement more ideas and succeed better at the ones we do implement. So, we'd love to do that. Boy, would we love to do that. Okay, now, a bit more news. Hey, you heard about the barge on the Mississippi that somebody flew a crop duster plane over a barge and over a pleasure craft with tourists and sprayed something on the passengers. And they think it was not anything harmful, but officials do not know who owns the crop dusting plane, and they're hoping a witness comes forward who might have seen an identifying number. And according to a local county official, this was a deliberate act by a crop duster. This was no accident. The story out of Jackson, Mississippi. All right. Now, hey, today Texas executed a 17-year-old murderer. Well, actually, he was 17 years old when he committed the murder back in 1985, and now he was 33 years old. And lawyers were begging the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, to stop the execution because he was only 17 years old when he committed the murder. And the U.S. Supreme Court has already ruled that you can execute people who were as young as 16 years old at the time of their murder. So, but these lawyers were arguing that, well, now international law shows a clear consensus that you can't execute anyone who is younger than 18 at the time of the murder, when they murdered someone. And so let me quote to you from some of the logic they use. This is out of an Associated Press article out today. The lawyers to the Supreme Court in their brief say governments should not engage in genocide. International law says a government cannot allow slavery or piracy. And the execution of 17-year-olds is at that level. Huh? Executing a 17-year-old is like genocide? It's like killing 6 million Jews? How do you figure that out? And they say, and the media has picked this up all around the country, even NPR radio today, I heard it, that America's the only country in the world that will execute a 17-year-old. Huh. I guess that includes Afghanistan, huh? I guess the Taliban won't execute a 17-year-old homo? That'd be news to me. Or a 17-year-old murderer? I guess they checked with every country in the world, right? Well, remember that United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child, which our government has never ratified, but many other countries have? And that bars the death sentence for anyone under 18 at the time of the offense. So, in August, the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals, they did stop the execution of a convicted killer. His name is Napoleon Beasley. You remember Mrs. Beasley or Miss Beasley? Now only old people remember Miss Beasley. But anyway, this is Napoleon Beasley. And his lawyers filed a last-minute appeal that cited that he was only 17 years old when he killed the father of a federal appeals court judge. And he was only 17 years old. He was a high school class president, a star athlete, and they stopped his execution. But the same court denied an appeal from this current murderer who was executed today, Gerald Mitchell, at the age of 33, because his criminal history was extensive by the time he was 17 when he murdered a 20-year-old who had just completed Navy basic training. And the murderer shot this guy to death after him and his brother-in-law, this is the victim and his brother-in-law, were trying to buy marijuana from this punk criminal, and the criminal shot him and killed him. And how did we catch this guy? Well, he robbed $25 from the victim and stole his car. Later that same day, this now dead murderer shot and killed an 18-year-old while trying to rob the 18-year-old of his necklace. And so then about a week later, the guy who's now dead, executed today, he was arrested in Corpus Christi, Texas. He was 185 miles away from where the crimes were committed, in Huntsville, Texas. And he was arrested driving his murder victim's car. So what do you think? Murderer went to public school, yes or no? So he murders some guy, steals his car, and then he's driving it for a week. And he's found in Corpus Christi, Texas. I wonder if my board operator knows what Corpus Christi means. See, he knows his Latin roots. Body of Christ. Corpus, like corpuscle or corporal punishment. Or incorporation, a body. Corpus Christi, Texas, the body of Christ. The only city in America established by the Apostle Paul. No, I'm only kidding, and I have not converted to Mormonism. All right. And I've also avoided British Israelism. Hey, in Paramus, New Jersey, a United Methodist minister was being interrogated by the FBI, suspected of being a child pornographer, a United Methodist minister, and it turns out they had the wrong guy. But he did look like a guy that the FBI has been looking for, Eric Rosser, featured on America's Most Wanted, and he was the wrong guy. In fact, this guy supposedly battles child pornography. That's neat. It's unheard of, unthinkable, unheard of, that a United Methodist minister would battle child pornography. I've never heard of such a thing in all my life. But there it is, in today's newspaper. Wow. A United Methodist minister who battles child pornography. I never, ever heard of such a thing, and I think it's wonderful. Okay. Now, you know, the United Methodist Church officially voted at their national convention that you don't have to believe anything and you could be a member of good standing in the United Methodist Church. For example, you could be a homosexual and a member in good standing. And so I wonder if you could be a child pornographer and a member in good standing. Now, according to the Washington Post, I don't know who they're talking to here because they have just anonymous sources, but they say that the FBI is very upset that none of the 150 people they still have incarcerated in the aftermath of the terrorist attack, that they're not talking, and especially four of them, like this one who is one of the two Indians traveling with false passports, not American Indians, but India Indians, traveling with false passports, and they were detained, and they had box cutters on them, hair dye, and $5,000 in cash. And the false passports, box cutters, so they think, hey, these guys might be linked. So the one that one guy, his name is Asmath. Asmath, I forget his first name. Do you know his first name? Of my board ops, Muhammad. What a stupid question. What's his first? Muhammad Asmath and three others, and the FBI's thinking, hey, you know, we don't usually use drugs to get information out of somebody, but we're thinking about using sodium pentothal or some other truth serum drug to try to get important information out of these guys. And, hey, of course we should do that. Of course we should do that. Now, say you pump some guy up with drugs, and he says, we were planning on blowing up a plane. You can't convict him with that, even if you tape record it, because he's on drugs. But you can use it as a lead. You could use it as evidence. He says, we got our orders from Osama bin Laden, and we're going to blow up an airplane. And he sent us money and instructions to our P.O. box in Las Vegas. And so you get that, and you follow the lead, and you find out if you're getting important information out of these guys on sodium pentothal. Of course you do it. Of course you do it. And they try a little bit of pressure. Actually, they try to bribe them. They say, hey, we'll give you money if you tell us. Our government says that. We'll give you light sentences. We'll give you a new identity in the witness relocation program. Well, we've got one listener who says that's worse than dying and going to hell, getting in a witness relocation program. He's been in it all his life since he was a kid. He said, don't do that. But anyway, we shouldn't be bribing these guys. We should tell them, look, we're going to kill you. We're going to execute you. So try to get this off your conscience and get right with God before we kill you. Well, of course, we'd only kill them if we could link them to Al-Qaeda. And we could, if we could link them to Al-Qaeda, then we need to charge them with conspiracy to murder. No matter what the relationship to this current terrorism, just the fact that they're members. This is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.